I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play, because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com. Okay. It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now. Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and we are still in Hawaii making the short little flight from Maui over to Oahu in Honolulu for this week's Sony Open. And to break it all down, I've brought in the namesake, Kyle Porter. Good morning, Happy New Year, and aloha.
Yes, aloha. Hello, goodbye. We are not still in Hawaii, but the PGA Tour is in Hawaii.
We as like, you know, our spirit, our eyeballs, our ears, we're focused on Hawaii.
For sure. I was disappointed. Like we had a really fun time with the podcast last night on Sunday night after the Tournament of Champions, but I was disappointed because I know JT's your guy. I know you had a ton of takes, so I'm gonna just give you the floor. Just empty the chamber here. Let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to take away from this. You are correct. I'm a big Justin Thomas champion. I think he's awesome in every way. It's kind of crazy to think that in this world of Rory and Brooks and now Tiger again, JT has led the tour in, you know, he's won the money title two of the last 3 years. And it actually kind of infuriates me a little bit that he hurt himself, at the Honda last year, because I'm thinking what could have been, right? Like he missed so many starts, and even when he did come back, he wasn't the same, because this guy is absolutely world's number one material. I'm just super stoked for what he's going to do in 2020 and 2021 and 2022 and 2032. Like who knows? Like this guy, really has an unbelievable skill set, and I think he's just going to be piling up trophies. He better get a new room at home for all the trophies on the shelf.
I mean, I just wrote an article about, you know, him having 12 wins through his first 142 PGA Tour starts. You know, 12 wins at that age at 26. I think we do the Tiger thing where Tiger's shadow suppresses how incredible guys like JT and Spieth have been. I mean, Think about like the time between, I don't know, like the late 2000s, early 2010s. If you look at like the career PGA Tour, like the most wins list, there's nobody from that era really on there. It's guys that like Rory and JT and Spieth who have come after that. DJ even after that a little bit, but you don't get like the Westwood, the Luke Donald. So I think there was sort of like a gap there between like the really heavy Tiger stuff in this era. And I don't know. I think JT is historically good, and I've gotten kind of crap for like talking about him as potentially one of the 20 or 25 best guys all time. Obviously he's not there yet, but the potential is there, and you can't say that about, 99% of the guys on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, it's funny. The Tiger Woods thing, it's a double-edged sword. He only gets compared to himself and major victories, but also a lot of these other guys only get compared to him in a sense of like, Tiger's already done it. Where like, if you remove Tiger from a lot of these unbelievable statistics, like Tiger's such an outlier. If you just remove him, there are guys in this era who are doing really unprecedented historical things, JT being one of them, but they kind of, to your point, Kyle, go overshadowed a little bit because Tiger kind of already trailblazed a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, even I was looking at Phil through his first 142, events, which is what JT had on Sunday. He had 11 wins and JT's got 12. And obviously we know that, you know, Phil's majors came later on. That's a big thing for JT. I mean, he would trade his 12 for Brooks's 7, right? Because yeah. Four of those were majors. So, I mean, that's going to be kind of what makes or breaks it for him in terms of like historical achievement. I was thinking about this as I was watching. Who do you think is more underrated between JT and Xander Schauffele? Because I think, you know, those are two guys that are, I don't know, they're pretty interesting. Xander's won a lot. He's only played, I think, like 82 PGA Tour events in his career. Yeah. So he's pretty short on his career in terms of starts. But I'm curious about who you think is more underrated out of those two.
Yeah, I think Xander is incredibly underrated, but I think who is more underrated still has to be JT because of kind of the historical aspect that we're putting him in now. It's the 12th win. You know, he passes the great thing is he passes Spieth. And I think you mentioned it last night, like they're never going to be tied again. Like no. you just assume JT, just start sprinting away here at some point. Geez, he might do it again this week. But, I still think that Justin Thomas being the fourth ranked player in the world, racking up wins at a historical clip and at an age that is really unprecedented, is still underrated because, you know, if you ask a general golf fan, hey, name the top two or the top three best golfers right now. Like, I don't know how many times you get JT. You're always going to get Tiger. You'll get some Rory. You might get some Brooks, and then you can kind of interchange a lot of these guys. It's not like JT would be a surefire answer every single time.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I wish I would have thought of this last night. Brendan Porath tweeted it. He said the decade of JT begins. And I thought that was, the perfect way to put it because it's going to be his prime, like the prime, like 27, 28, 29, 30, of his career. And when the decade ends, he'll be 36 and kind of on that, not the other side of it necessarily, but for somebody like him who swings the way he does and, you know, I don't know. I don't know if the swing holds up until he's like 50, you know, we'll see. Yeah. But I just think this decade it has real potential to, you know, there'll be other guys that win a ton. It has real potential for us to look back on it 10 years from now when we're still doing this podcast, of course. And look at the 20s like we looked at Rory in the 2010s. I really think that.
In 10 years, you won't have to download this podcast. We will just beam it directly into your brain. So you won't have to worry about that.
There will just be miniature, miniature holograms of us in your brain.
Yeah.
Like just talking.
Of course. Yeah. I love it. All right. So there's a couple of great notes and we kind of covered some of these, you know, Justin Ray from the 15th club, trying to put into perspective some of the things that came out of it. And we covered them, but just to kind of shout this out here. I mean, JT's 12th career PGA Tour title, 12 wins under the age or before the age 27. You know, that list is Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, Sam Snead, you know, 12 wins in the last 5 years. The only other two guys that have done that are Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy, the guys that are next on that list. I mean, it's just unbelievable stuff, both historically and currently that, I mean, the last decade for Rory was so great because he came onto the scene like, boom, first win was 2010. It was like the perfect 10-year stretch for him. Feels like we're getting that from JT.
Yeah, no, totally. And that's sort of why I wish I would have thought of and you know, I think some of the Rory has more wins through his first 142 than JT did. And I think some of that's a little, I don't know. Maybe it's fair because, JT played college and then he played Corn Ferry and Rory played Euro Tour a little bit before he came over to the PGA Tour. So maybe their like starting points on the PGA Tour coincide better than I'm thinking. But it just seemed like Rory had a little bit more professional experience than JT did. And yet he's only two wins ahead of him at the same point, in terms of career starts. Now, again, it goes back to the major thing and that's what it's going to be all about. But I don't know. This is what I wrote in my piece. You can make a lot worse bets than betting on JT to be the player of the decade in the 20s.
Yeah. Until, you know, 5 years from now, someone we've never even considered comes in and just runs over. But no, you're absolutely right. He's certainly the front runner and the tour and Justin Thomas loves Hawaii. He's going to get to stay there. The tour is going to turn to the Sony Open this week. But before we do that, there's a couple non-Sony storylines that I wanted to kind of get your opinion on and see if we could hash these out a little bit. Jay Monahan, PGA Tour Commissioner, had a press conference at Kapalua, kind of looking ahead for the 2020 season. And a few of the takeaways that I think we should chat through, the first being the slow play policy. So there's been a lot of talk about slow play recently. You know, people are recording on PGA Tour Live on their phones and posting it on Twitter and getting everybody all fired up. And Jay Monahan kind of says, you know, there might be measures that will target players over groups instead of putting an entire group on the clock, might be something that influences players on a more individual level. So for you, Kyle, the PGA Tour, I think you noted this, is kind of a little lagging behind on this when you compare it to the Euro Tour.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard. Like this is not a PGA Tour related thing. It's any large organization that's the biggest in their industry. They're often, almost always, going to be the slowest to respond to stuff like, you know, issues or problems or perceived problems even.
Right.
And the Euro Tour, I think they're like, whatever, we'll try anything, you know, and it doesn't seem to like affect their product, or it's almost part of their brand is to try anything, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think you compare some of the stuff that they've done in terms of being more proactive about it compared to the PGA Tour. And then the other part of it is like, sometimes I'm like, do people really care about this? Or is
That's
it just,
what I was going to ask.
Is it just me and you and Noah Inup and Brennan Porath and Andy Johnson talking on Twitter and saying, man, we care about this a lot, you know, because sometimes it just feels like a lot of this is like the echo chamber of Twitter or of us texting or whatever. And I'm like, does my dad care about this? Does, does the general golf fan, do 98% of golf fans even care that Bryson plays in, you know, 440 instead of like 425? I don't know. I think you have to consider like how it materially affects your product. You know, some of this stuff is, I think golf is too slow, but I also don't know that I think there's a way to broadcast it in a way that doesn't really show that, you know, and that's the majority of your people is who's watching on TV. So I don't know. That's kind of some of my thoughts on slow play right now.
That's where I'm at. So I was going to say to you, cause I didn't have another way to really frame it. I was going to be like, does this matter? Like, does slow play even matter? Because if you're attending an event, like, I'm out there for however many hours, right? 5, 6, 8, 9, like I could be out there all day. The difference, and I'm standing at a hole, the difference over, you know, Bryson grinding a minute and a half on a read or 2 minutes makes literally zero difference to me. If I'm watching on TV, for the most part, I'm not even seeing a lot of the in-between stuff. It's like the PGA Tour Live product where you're following a very small group, or like you see it at like the skins game at Zozo, where like, oh crap, we have to fill a lot of time in between these guys actually hitting shots. Now we're actually showing them read the putt from every single angle, and people are like, this is crazy. I didn't know they did that, but you just never saw it before. So I do think this is more of a broadcast issue than it is an actual tour slow play issue.
Yeah, and I think there's also a competitive advantage issue. You know, does it make the shot easier to take 10 minutes to analyze it rather than one?
Yeah.
Maybe, like very marginally, but you start adding that stuff up. And so it's like, you know, it's like having a shot. It's like if the Lakers and the Bucks are playing and you're like, well, the Lakers get a 28-second shot clock.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, okay, what does that mean? You know, and so I do think there needs to be some sort of, I don't know, to me it's more of a competitive advantage issue than maybe anything else. And I think there has to be some sort of enforcement there because I don't know, I think the players care about that and I think they should care about it.
So
decision making is a skill.
I agree. Real quick, what's a good punishment? I don't know what a good punishment is. I'd hate to see, you know, strokes added. I think that would be insane. I think fining is interesting, but if you're putting for $1 million or the difference between first and second and it's 750 grand, I'm happy to take a fine to take an extra minute if I make sure that I'm ready to go, something like that. So I don't know how you enforce this outside of just like a hard shot clock.
Yeah. I think I mean, what's the punishment in football or basketball for not playing within the play clock or the shot clock? Like you lose possession. So what's the equivalent of that in golf? I don't know. Maybe it's
a caddy has to hit the shot for you.
Yeah. One of us has to hit the shot. Taking a bogey on a hole and moving to the net. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it you either don't have it or you have to enforce it for the way that players view the thing.
Yeah, I will agree, and that's a good bow to put on it is the players care about it. So something is going to happen, will have to happen, and they'll just have to figure out, what the best path to go down is. Now, the other storyline to come out of this, press conference in Maui was the tour, you know, took them a while, but they're starting to open up to getting into, you know, sports betting, whether it's fantasy golf, now that DraftKings is an official partner, and Jay Monahan mentioned an agreement with IMG Arena to kind of get a lot of the stats out there, the shot link data, which then will inevitably lead to a betting program that can be accessed on your mobile devices. And he says something is coming, within the first 6 months of the year, probably not to the point where you'll be at the event. You know, I won't roll up to Torrey Pines in a couple of weeks and place my wager on a kiosk or anything like that. But in theory, at some point, I'd be able to whip out my phone and place some type of wager. So the PGA Tour, Kyle, generally slower to move on some of these things. Other leagues, the NBA have embraced this. How do we feel about the PGA Tour kind of now coming into 2020, the new decade, baby?
Yeah, well, when there's money to be made on it,
that's
right. And look, again, like that's not a criticism of the PGA Tour. Like these are business decisions. When it comes to slow play, is there money to be lost? I don't know. Maybe not, you know? And so I get why they're not super proactive on it. When it comes to gambling, is there money to be made? Yeah, absolutely. So you see more movement there, especially in the last 6 months or a year. And that's, again, like, I think I think the PGA Tour gets criticized a lot. They're making business decisions. And yeah. Do we agree with all of them? No. But there's no company that you would agree with every single decision that they made. I'm curious about your perspective. Like, why – I guess I don't totally understand why the shot link data is needed for some of these, like some of the gambling stuff. Like what is, do you know what the reason behind that is?
I would envision it goes something like this, because this is what we've seen from other sports is, you know, you can place a bet on the outcome of a full game of basketball, for example. And for golf, you can bet, you know, John Rahm's 10-1 to win this. But then inevitably all of these competitors want to start offering smaller, quicker turnaround bets. So now you're betting on who's going to be the leader after one round. And then you're betting on, eventually, is Tiger Woods going to make a par, birdie, or bogey on this hole? And I think what tends to happen is that shot link data, which in theory is coming in real time, is going to allow you to make bets and pay out bets very, very quickly on what the results of the hole are. And then your users would also be able to have on this mobile program, you know, if I bet that Tiger is going to make a birdie, I want to be able to sweat that, right? I want a place where I can see his tee shot was 310 in the right rough, and now he's going to have to figure something out from there, right? So I think it's not only a way to place the bet on a lot of these, smaller, quicker turnaround bets, but also a way that you can view the progress of your bet out as it's going on.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, that's what people already do at events, right? Like,
yeah, of course.
They're already like, I'll bet you $20 Tiger makes a birdie or whatever.
Right.
So I think it makes sense for that to be, to come to fruition with your phone or iPad or whatever. I kind of like the, every year, got people that go to the Open Championship, they get to go to the betting spots or whatever. Yeah. Like, I think that's kind of cool. I would love to see that. And I think, you know, it's part of the fun of, sometimes I'll go with my in-laws to the racetrack, to the race, yep. to watch the horses race. And part of the fun is getting the slip and following it. I don't know. It's kind of an experience, you know? And so I think that would be cool to have at some of these golf events.
Yeah. Even a $2 bet, makes almost anything more interesting, right? You know, someone, you know, there's a lot of guys and a lot of casual fans. If you go to an event that you might not know some of these golfers, but right. Hey, if I'm like, okay, this guy, I think this guy is going to make a birdie here. Like I'm his biggest fan for the next three shots or whatever it ends up taking. Like I just think it's good for the game. It grows and we see this in the fantasy world, like fantasy golf, players probably know more about the field and more players in the field than a lot of the casual fans because they're kind of in it more often. And I think that's right. Good for the game that you're able to identify who some of these other golfers are outside of the world's top 10.
Yeah. You're like, why are you the world's biggest Bryce Garnett fan? And, and it's like, well, you won me $11 at the Phoenix Open one year.
Right. It's really something that, I think opens up a lot of possibilities and, you know, brings in a lot of, you know, younger people and just more ways to get fans interested in the game. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's great.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We've got the Sony Open preview, which we will take on the other side. But for right now, let's take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS. Monday, 9, 8 central. On CBS. And streaming on Paramount+.
And we're back. All right, Kyle. Sony Open, Honolulu, Hawaii. I will say this tournament has a little special place in my heart because this is the first event I ever saw live. I want to say, 6 or 7 years ago, my sister was living in Hawaii. We were visiting. We went over for the Sony Open. And I think you know this, Kyle, and I would highly encourage anyone who can get to an event live because when you see some of these guys, Bryce Garnett, who, you know, might be 150 in the world, 200, and they still hit the ball like I have never seen before and I have never heard before. I saw guys, like it sounded like shotguns coming off of their club face. I was in awe and I did not really appreciate how good these guys were until I saw them in person.
Yeah, totally. And I think part of the fun, if you've never been to an event, especially at like a major, because it's kind of buzzy, is go out to the driving range, you know, Go out and watch guys practice different shots, pump drives against the back net or whatever the case. That's awesome. And to stand out there, cause you can usually get a good spot depending on what day it is. Some of that stuff, you're like, whoa, this is different than I thought. It always is in professional sports. And especially with, I mean, some of the stuff, just being around Koepka, watching him hit balls, it's like, what is this? Like, It's you're talking about
what is this?
You're talking about like the 150th guy, and it's like he doesn't even do the same stuff as the 150th guy. It feels like a different sport. It's wild. So yeah, anybody that can do that, I would recommend as well.
Yeah. So Sony Open, Wailea Country Club, the host of this event since 1965, quite a long partnership. It's a par 70, about 7,000 yards, and we will not be seeing Jordan Spieth here. You and I are both really excited to see what comes out of Jordan Spieth in 2020. I think he's one of the more interesting storylines, but he is battling a little cold, so we're not going to see him.
Yeah, didn't this happen a couple years ago? Didn't he have like mono a couple years ago and like couldn't? Man. Do you remember that?
It kind of sounds – now I'm like Googling Jordan Spieth mono and I'm terrified of what could possibly come up. But like it does sound
– I'm pretty sure that happened a couple years ago and he had kind of a slow start to whatever the year – I think it was like 18. I think it was maybe 18. But the Sony Open last year was the first time where I heard him talk about his swing and I felt genuinely worried where I was like, oh gosh, like I don't know if or when this is going to get better. So – you know, it's kind of a bummer because he would have been, other than JT, kind of the primary storyline. But, Yeah, you want guys like that healthy for Masters, PGA, Players Championship, those tournaments coming up.
Yeah, it looks like he did battle mono at the beginning of the 2018 year. So you are correct, sir. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. we're going to get 21 of the 34 who we saw in Maui last week. They're headed to Honolulu. This is the first full field event. We've seen a lot of different winners, and there's, you know, a couple different ways to play this course, in my opinion. But, you know, Kuchar is going to be here to defend his championship. Justin Thomas, who, you know, goes out and shoots a 59 a couple of years ago and wins this thing, he's going to be in attendance. He's the big favorite. And what we'll do is we'll go over the betting and DFS preview with Greg Ducharme in full tomorrow. But there are a handful of names. Hideki's here. Like, there's a contingent of four or five guys at the top that are certainly noteworthy.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, obviously JT is the headliner. It would be crazy if he picked up another Hawaii win. Somebody, Ryan Ballingy, said on Twitter we should start calling him General Eisenhower because he loves the Pacific Rim.
Wow.
Like, he just owns, like, you know, Asia and Hawaii and all these events. He said in his presser on Sunday night after the Tournament of Champions that he said, sign me up for another 59. Cause somebody asked him, like, you know, are you going to try something? Just, yeah, I don't know, whatever, but like, are you going to try to shoot 59 again? He's like, well, I mean, yeah, sign me up. Like, if I could do it. I think this course, Rick, I think it's so interesting because I think it brings so many different guys into play. It's kind of the, I would call it like the Zach Blair effect, right? You know, places like this and Harbortown, Colonial, like Zach Blair can't go win at, I don't know, Bethpage.
Like, yeah, he's there's just like not gonna... six spots a year Zach Blair's in play.
Yeah. And I mean, seriously, he can't go beat Brooks Koepka at Bethpage. They are playing different sports at that point. And so I think tournaments like this are fascinating because you do see a guy like JT go and win it, but then you see somebody who is not long, like a Kuchar. I'm trying to think of who else has won this over the years who's not as long.
Jimmy Walker.
Yeah.
Remember he like shortened his driver like really short and was just playing to like get it 275 in the fairway. He won this back-to-back years.
He did. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, I think that type of course makes things super interesting because it brings so many more guys into play.
Yeah. So what this much more narrow fairways than any of those guys saw in Maui last week. Only 7,000 yards. There's only two par fives. What I think is really interesting is the yardage on this course has actually decreased in the last 30 years, which is a note that you yourself, Kyle, I was doing my research on this, made last year, which I believe, I mean, there are not many courses that have been shortened over the last 30 years.
No, and it's awesome because I think it's proof that you don't, I say this, somebody's going to go shoot like 31 under or whatever, but I think it's proof that you don't necessarily have to make courses 10,000 yards as long as you design them the right way. Now, some of this is like, you're going to see JT take it over the trees on whatever 17 or 18 or whatever it is. And you're like, wow, that seems abnormal.
Yeah,
but
that's not fair.
I hope that there are more courses that are designed in the future that are shorter, that sort of just make you make decisions, you know. That's the whole thing. I'm not like big architecture or whatever, but I do like short courses because I think it gives a lot of benefit to guys who are ball strikers, you know, guys like JT, like somebody we're going to talk about in a second, Corey Connors, who are just elite ball strikers. And that's the name of the game. And that's what I want to see is guys hitting great shots into tough pin positions and scoring well.
Yeah, the plethora of par fours, it does turn a bit into a ball striker's paradise. And you named him. Corey Connors is a guy I'm super excited about in 2020 because of that ball striking skill set that he has. He's awesome off the tee. He is awesome on approaches. It is literally just the flat stick that is his issue. But I'm on, you know, hashtag team no putt. Like I love Corey Connors. Literally, if he gains like any strokes putting or just putts neutral for a week, he basically returns a top five performance. Like the last like three times he has like gained like one stroke for the week putting, it's like third place, fourth place. It's really unbelievable stuff. And he's a guy that, you know, he finished in a tie for third here last year coming off the Monday qualifier, which was the best result for a Monday qualifier until he did it 3 months later. Monday qualified at the Valero Texas Open and went out and won the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've read the list on here before, but the tee to green guys, the top 10 tee to green guys last season, I mean, it's like, I don't have the list in front of me. It's like Rory, JT, Hideki, Brooks. Oh, Corey Connors is on here.
Right.
It's kind of like shocking to see, but he does it like over extended periods of time. It's kind of crazy, honestly. It's kind of wild that he does that. So yeah, it's all about the putter for him. And, yeah, I'm interested to see how he plays this week. Where did he finish at Tournament of Champions? I didn't even see that.
I just had it up. T19, 2 under.
Okay.
With Paul Casey, Tyler Duncan, Nate Lashley. Speaking of Nate Lashley, I guess Lashley did not Monday qualify for the Rocket Mortgage. He was an alternate in that event because he came in and won that thing too.
Yeah. Doc Redman was the qualifier. And he finished second. He was the Monday qualifier. He finished second in the event, in the actual event. And Lashley was the alternate qualifier. And he won it. So both of the, I think there might have been one other Monday qualifier, but, or maybe a couple. I don't know. But they were both Monday qualifiers and then went 1-2 at the Rocket Mortgage.
Beauty. So, so course history wise, we've got a lot of it since, you know, we've used the same course for a million years. And some of the guys that stand out in terms of, you know, historic strokes gained around here. No surprise to see Justin Thomas at the top of this list. Matt Kuchar, Charles Howell III are three guys who are in the field this week. And then, two guys that aren't normally in play a lot of weeks, but you mentioned it. This is the week. Zach Blair and Brian Stewart. This course really does open up the possibility for some of these shorter, more accurate hitters, guys who can hit their irons or wedge as well, to be in contention.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that Charles Howell III has made like $20 million here over the course of his career.
Ain't that the truth?
And I think it's interesting for guys like, you know, somebody I was looking at is Colin Morikawa, who, I mean, he's plenty long. He's like 295, 296 off the tee, which is kind of in that Spiethian range, maybe a little more than Spieth, but you know, he's not like JT or DJ long, mm-hmm. but he's an elite iron player, right? And so I'm curious to see what kind of week somebody like him has at a course. I don't know that he's played one of the shorter courses like this since he's been a pro. So I don't know. I'm kind of big on him this week.
So I actually had just stumbled across a nugget on Morikawa, so I tweeted it out. And you're right. What we talk about a lot is he gets a lot of credit for his irons, and he should. He's awesome at it. But he does it a little bit different than JT, but he's gained strokes off the tee in 75% of his rounds as a pro. So obviously not as many as JT, but that's the same rate that JT gains off the tee. So like it's really unbelievable, what he's been able to do in such a short period of time. And yeah, interested to see what his first full year turns into, because I think I've only got like, you know, 12 measured a tournaments for him just because he's, you know, played so little, but this feels like a pretty good spot.
By the way, Corey Connors finished 27th in strokes gained putting last week at Kapalua.
Oh boy.
Did you see where, what DJ did putting?
He went nuts, right? He made like a billion feet of putts.
He finished, let's see here, I've got it pulled up. He finished second in putting, but he was, like 21st from tee to green.
His opening round, off the tee was one of the worst rounds of his career.
He lost 3.5 strokes off the tee.
Yeah, I went back in my database. I could not find. It was like multiple years before I got even up to anything close. And then you know what he did in the round two is he led the field in strokes gained off the tee in round two. He bounced right back with it.
Yeah. No. What were we talking about with Sony? With
I don't know, Morikawa or something.
Yeah, Morikawa. Yeah, that's it. That's really interesting because I think that, you know, I think that we talk about length, like that's the most important thing. And I think it is. I think you see that with guys like Hovland and you know, kind of Rory, the top guys in terms of strokes gained off the tee, but there are also other ways to do it. And he seems to be more of a, this may or may not come to fruition. He seems to be more of kind of a precision guy from tee to green. And so, I don't know, this just seems like a good fit for him. We'll see how it goes. And again, with all these guys, it depends on how they putt.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm intrigued by him this week.
Yeah, what I like is, not super long, but he won't kill you off the tee, right? Like, there's just some guys that, you know, you can be long and crooked, and that's a terrible, terrible combination of things, but he just won't kill you there, and then his irons are super awesome. All right, so here we go. So let's wrap this up here. I've got a couple of over-unders on PGA Tour wins for the total for 2020. So this already includes their wins already. So Justin Thomas already has two wins, right, in this. His over-under is 3.5. So is he going to win two more times? Like, he certainly could, right?
I would say yes. I get really leery about guys who have just won because it feels like they're never going to stop winning. But I also came into the year thinking it was going to be like a 5-win type year for him. So whether he had won yesterday or not, I think I would still say yes.
What I think is interesting about him is he's obviously going to play all the big events, but he also, like, I feel like he kind of shows up like some random places every now and then.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's, and they're not super random, but like Genesis or Honda or the RBC Canadian, like places he's played over the years, even Safeway. Obviously that's already happened for this season, but like, he's going to be the odds on favorite at a lot of events. So it would not surprise me one bit to see him, you know, cash two more of them.
Yeah, even like this week, you know, Sony, like Rom and DJ, those guys are going home, and JT's like, let's play another one. So that's a good point.
All right, so speaking of the other two guys who are at 3.5 wins, Rory McIlroy, who already has one, and John Rom, I don't know if I think he's winless on the year, right, in terms of what this over under would include. But out of those two, Rory or Rom, who is more likely to finish with more than 3.5 wins here? So four wins or more.
It's definitely Rory, but I don't think, I don't know, I don't think either will get there. I mean, Rom hasn't won on the PGA Tour in 2 years. He hasn't won since 18 Torrey. I think that's right.
Yeah, because you're not counting the Hero World Challenge, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And the rest of them are, European events. Career Builder, he would have won. But yeah, you're right. It's been a while.
Yeah, that's right. He doesn't play as much as like a JT on the PGA Tour. So I think four for him would be a ton.
Yeah.
It'd be a lot for Rory too. What was he last year? Was he three or four?
Three.
Players, Canadian, and Tour Championship?
Yeah.
And he's already got one this year, the HSBC. So I think it'll either be three or four. I'll say under.
Okay. Under. I think I'm under on both of those guys. I mean, at some point, you're running out of tournaments. They all play the same ones. If JT wins four or five, that takes away from some of these other guys at some point. All right. And then here is, I'll give you two more, because I think these are the more interesting ones. We can't have a segment or a show where we, don't talk about Tiger Woods. So he's at 1.5 here. Now the Zozo is one. So does Tiger win another event in 2020?
My prediction was that he would not, which is a dumb prediction, but he's also sort of gone against everything that we've thought about him since he's returned. I feel like every time we're like, oh, he's cooked, he like goes out and wins.
Yeah.
And then every time we're like, oh, he is going to roll. Like after the Masters, he like was just toast for the whole summer. And so I'm just like going against what everybody else is saying. That's like literally my only justification for saying that he won't win again.
I'll tell you, in betting, going against the public is usually a pretty profitable way to go. So you might be onto something there. It's close. I mean, he's won three times in his last 18 starts. So if he plays another 18 in 2020, do you think he can get one more? I would probably, you know, my heart says yes, my head says no, just because the sheer number of events he's going to play, it's probably going to be much lower than a lot of these guys. He's only going to play the big events with the best fields. Like, there's really no gimmies out there for him. So heart says yes, head says no, I don't think I'd bet it. And then the last guy here, it's a half a win. So will this guy win in 2020 or not? And it is the man, the myth, the legend, Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, I'm contractually obligated to say yes.
Yes, you are.
that is not based in data or reality, really, but
at least not this timeline that we're currently in. Maybe another timeline.
I'm just riding this thing to the bottom of the ocean if it does happen to sink. So I'm in. Yeah, give him a win.
I'm really torn on this because long term I'm not a Spieth guy, but I do think he wins again, right? Like there's no way he doesn't win again. And I feel like this is such a critical year for him that I think he might play some events that we haven't seen him play before. He might go and, you know, like he will be one of the better players in the field at a lot of these events. If he goes and plays, I don't know if we'll play John Deere again, but you know, something like that, right? Where he could be the guy and nobody grinds like Jordan Spieth does. I'm banking on him still being in this mentally and being able to figure it out physically. I think he will. I think he's definitely going to win again, and I think he will win this year.
Welcome to the club. You can be the treasurer.
I'm not sure I want that title, but yeah. I accept it, but I'm very nervous about it.
Real quick, did we actually make – I don't know if you remember this, but did we actually make our official major predictions in the major podcast we did a couple weeks ago?
I know we at least made a short list. I remember talked about like Sungjae at PGA Championship, Tiger at the Open. I don't know if we actually settled on like final picks.
Do you have your final picks or should we do that in another pod?
I don't know if I have them handy. I mean, I have them in my head if you want to go through it.
Well, I had to turn mine in today. So I needed like a partner here to just look foolish.
Yeah, you go first.
On January 6th or whatever it is. Okay, so Masters, I've got Rory. I can't quit it. I have issues. I have problems.
You do have problems. I believe I actually had JT. And just being like, this is the year of JT and why not go get Augusta and then we can stop talking about the big major that he hasn't won.
Go get that. PGA, I've got, I got John Rahm, and I don't know, the PGA just, especially at Harding Park, it feels like, I don't know, whoever gets hot for 4 days, it just feels like a free for all, and he's proven to be able to be that guy, and I think that, I don't know, he's talked about like changing his schedule a little to fit the majors better, so I'm bullish on him winning a major this year.
I believe the PGA is where I had Rory at, because Harding Park was where he won his match play, right? If I'm remembering that correctly.
Correct.
And, so I had him slotted in there, although I have also, financially tied myself to Sungjae at 140-1 to capture that major there.
That's pretty sexy.
That's a good number.
I love that. Okay. US Open Wingfoot. I've got JT. I don't know. I don't love it. I want to see him. I think he's a tougher player. I think he's a more resilient player than he was 3 years ago or 5 years ago. But I want to see him like really like up against it, really uncomfortable and kind of slay the dragon. Cause I don't know, the PGA at Quail Hollow, he kind of rolled, which is great. Like that's a great way to win a major. I don't know. I guess he did have a little adversity, if I'm remembering correctly, on Sunday. But Wingfoot's going to be just, you know, a monster. And I think that I don't feel great about that pick, but I also do feel great about his stuff from like 150 and in. Mm. And that place is just so crazy. And I think that he's going to be really, really good around those greens. And I don't know. I have a feeling about him at Wingfoot.
This to me is the most difficult one. Not only because it's a US Open and anything can happen, but like there's just so many, like you look at the list of names and I'm like, oh my gosh, like all of these guys could win it. I believe I settled on, I like Patrick Cantlay here. And yeah. I think Cantlay is sneaky long. I don't think a lot of people realize that. And, you know, you get him on some fast greens. I think he's going to be just fine. And he's like 20-1 at the moment. So he's another one of these guys that I think has too much talent to be majorless for too long.
Yep. I love it. Okay. Last one. Royal St. George's, Open Championship. I got Xander. So the reason I have Xander is, I think that, and I said this on our pod after the Tournament of Champions, I think he gets a little uncomfortable when he's out in front, when he's like in pole position. And I think the Open is the easiest one to win from behind, like from not out in front, just cause it gets a little chaotic and it gets weird. He's played well there before. I know he hasn't played St. George's, but I don't know. I've got him winning the final major of 2020.
Okay, this is the other one that I already have a little financial incentive into. So it's I have Tiger Woods here. Just because I think he can go out and do it. And if there's an opportunity where he can kind of club down a little bit, hit a bunch of those little, you know, three iron stingers off the tee, his approach game is, you know, second to none. I know he's going to be gearing up for these type of events. I'm very excited about it. And I got a good number on him.
I love it. So you do think he's going to be over 1.5 wins?
Well, I guess I do, because at least my bank account would appreciate it. And that was the heart was betting the Open Championship, not the head. But yeah, so I guess I'm playing both sides of the coin on that one.
That's great. I love it.
Cool. All right. That'll do it for this episode of The First Cut. I'd like to thank Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. I'm Rick Gaiman. You can follow me on Twitter at RickRunGood. If you like what you hear, don't be afraid. Give us a little 5-star rating and review, and we'll catch you again soon.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.